Why do I struggle when things are going well? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin. Tyler, hey man, we're coming down to it with the Radiant Dawn. It's around the corner, really.
Yeah, I think by the time people are listening to this, we're probably within maybe 2 months.
Yeah, yeah. It happens fast.
It does. We were just talking about it today before we got on the show, like how fast it's coming up on us, and we're still putting together logistics and things.
Yeah, so at the time we record this, I hope there's still spots available. If you're thinking about it, now's the time to sign up. So get
on. Talk a little bit
about
it, Brandon. We talk about signing up, but talk a little bit about like what the purpose is of Radiant Dawn really quickly. Like, why do we even do this thing every year?
Well, it's deeper healing work. It's helping women connect to themselves and to connect to other women, and to connect to God. And it sets them up for the long term for recovery work. Not just going to therapy sessions, but actually having an experience. And so those future therapy sessions that they go to are a lot more meaningful because they now view the whole world differently. And so it's incredible. I can't really put into words what
it's
it
one
is.
Of those things that is, for so many people, it's such an emotionally shifting thing that the most emotionally shifting things that happen in our lives often don't have words. And yeah, that's what this is. It's an opportunity that's specifically designed towards the healing and reclamation of your heart to have the potential of an experience and an emotional shift and not just a rational learning process.
Yeah. And you look at it and you might be thinking, God, that's a lot of money. You know, when it comes to therapy and your own healing, it really is a great bang for your buck because you're getting so much help in a very intense situation with so much support. It's actually a really good deal. So come on out to the Radiant Dawn.
RadiantDawn.org is the website. Go check it out. Pull the trigger if you have any questions. If you have any inclination or anything drawing you to it, pull the trigger. You won't regret it.
All right, let's get into it here with our guest. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
First off, I got to say, I love your name.
Yeah, we got three Patricks on the show now.
Yeah. So just tell us a little bit of background. Tell us what's going on with you and then ask away.
All right. So I entered recovery from a pornography addiction 4 years ago. It's, you know, really my relationship with God, you know, transform then, in that process, really the relationship with my wife, how I relate to my son, and really how I relate to the world's changed. You know, I thought I had a problem when I entered recovery, that I needed something I needed to stop. I didn't realize, you know, how developmental trauma, you know, those little messages from that I associated with, struggles in school, and, from parents trying to help, but also falling short of what I needed, you know, how that impacted me, how fear of failure drove me to succeed, but never allowed me to, you know, it was never enough. So it's really changed the way I live. Obviously, over 4 years of recovery, you know, through intensives, groups, you know, my own counseling, you know, I've really identified a lot of triggers and, you know, usually stress, you know, and as you do in recovery, you know, when I would identify, you know, stress, I'd be extra vigilant, you know, I'd reach out to group members. I'm at a place now to where, the place that I've struggled, you know, most recently has been when things have gone well. And that's a part I'm not really familiar with. My wife's kind of helped me identify it. And I'm wondering, I want to explore that some and see what roots are there, what messages may be associated with that.
I'm glad you're here on the show, Patrick. I think it's a great question. It's so interesting how many people would probably ask the same question. I'm wondering, could you just clarify things and maybe just add a little bit more information here? When you say I struggle when things are going well, can you just kind of tell us what you mean by struggle? Is that just with the acting out triggers an addiction, or is that an emotional thing? And then what does it mean when things are going well? So define struggle and well.
Yeah. So struggle for me would be something that's in an inner circle. You know, it's, I'm at a place in recovery where it's not pornography, but it can be something similar, but it's, you know, a middle circle behavior that's, you know, that, you know, is a break in sobriety, you know, when I say things are going well, like I can't associate it. It seems to have come out of the blue, even though I know it didn't. So I changed jobs recently. You know, that was a big lifestyle change. You know, entered into school full time. Those are things I knew would be difficult. You know, a change in family income, going back to school. Like I knew those would be triggering. And I kind of prepared for it. And I think the recovery work I've done have allowed me there. Then kind of getting to the place where realizing, hey, I can do this. This is going well. You know, I know God's, you know, so I've always got God accessible, but I tend to do well when there's those hurdles where I say, you know, where I really have to, you know, call on God to, you know, for support, you know, call on guys in my, you know, in the groups I've been a part of and the guys that hold me accountable and let them know, hey, I've got this challenge. You know, I need your support. I need you to hold me accountable. As those kind of fade and things and getting into a rhythm where it looks like, hey, I can actually do this. You know, changing jobs is going better than my wife and I anticipated at this point. You know, school's going to take a lot of time, but I can do it. And my wife and I are really connecting. So those obstacles that I've been preparing for that I'm focused on the horizon start to clear. And then all of a sudden, you know, I find myself, you know, having a break in sobriety. And I think it's because I'm focused on those obstacles. Okay. I've got to be vigilant here, but as they kind of go, there's a part of me that's uncomfortable with things going well.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you just said. And I'm going to kind of shrink it down to a nutshell just to kind of make this point for a second. I know I'm probably being a little bit sarcastic, but what you just said is I've been doing my recovery and recovery has worked so well that my life is actually getting better. And I don't know if I want it to get better.
Yeah. You know, I think that sums it up well. I think it's more not knowing what to do with it going well.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, we're talking about, and Patrick, I'm sure you can hear this. We're talking about sabotage. You realize that? You see that?
Yep.
So you're sabotaging yourself. And usually behind self-sabotage is, do you know what's behind it?
You know, it's funny because for others, I could help them call it out. But with myself, I've got blinders. You know, I think it's this fear. I mean, it's obviously fear.
So ask yourself, what are you using that sabotage for?
Yeah, I think it's to avoid, you know, hope that doesn't pan out. Like hope is scary.
Yeah. Okay. So hope is scary. Is hope good?
Yeah.
Okay, hope's good, but you're saying hope's scary.
Yeah.
Why would hope be scary to you?
Yeah. So, you know, I think I've just adapted to a life to where my, you know, living in a way that I feel like my back's against the wall and I'm having to fight. And it's a new way of being, you know, shifting that dynamic and just living in a routine of health. And when there's a challenge, you know, I think I'm approaching it from a much healthier place where it's not fear of failure, but it's something to focus on. But there's this, I guess, you know, subconsciously this fear that, hey, things can't continue to go well, you know, in perpetuity.
Let me take that a step further for a second, Patrick. you're right. Things probably won't go well in perpetuity. What does it mean if you open yourself up to things going well and even hoping and even seeing that it could go well and then it's not going to go well in perpetuity? What does that mean about you or about life? What does that mean?
Yeah, so for the most part, I feel like I'm pretty good at accepting life as it is, not as I would have it. I expect ups and downs. I think it's not knowing where those ups and downs are going to be. In other words, if it's chaos I create, I'm in control of it.
There you go. So you're afraid of being out of control and having things not go your way, even when you're doing everything right.
Yep. And not knowing where it's going to come from, I guess.
Like, you are illustrating the vulnerability of success. And like this is so common with addiction, where success is such a trigger because addiction's all about control. The further you climb up that mountain, the further you can tumble down.
Yeah.
And if you can control it where I only have to go up this far, then I can bring my addiction in to kind of just keep me only going up this far. Then I don't run the risk. I don't run the risk of having hope. I don't run the risk of, of like really having success here. And therefore I don't run the risk of failing far because I only fail this far. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think subconsciously that probably is the script, you know, that I've followed.
So the question is like, what parts are there that you've developed that are there telling you that, hey, let's protect you from being successful. And then underneath that, my other question is what experiences have you had where being hopeful has hurt you and being successful has ended in failure or hurt you?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll go to your second question first, because, you know, I think it goes back to childhood. You know, there was, you know, my parents and teachers saw a lot of potential in me because I could do things that no one else could. But the things that everyone that came easy to others didn't come easy to me. So there was this search for what the problem was. And what I internalized is, oh, I must be the problem. And in, you know, growing up, or, you know, around fifth grade, you know, me doing schoolwork and you know, I never really had any phonic awareness, so spelling was tough. That was big fights all week. And I knew it was coming. You know, I would, you know, start the week trying to do schoolwork at home and try to just hope it was going to be a good week. But each week it would, as the week went on and, you know, the weekly test, you know, and homework would, you know, come closer, it was inevitably a fight. And I think I'd probably started picking it, you know, in one way or another, because, you know, if I knew when it was, you know, not knowing when it's coming creates anxiety. But going ahead and poking the bear and you know what reaction you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that answered any of the questions that...
You can hear the development of this, that you got comfortable being the failure. Is if spelling's hard, you said two things at the same time. They saw that I could do things that other people couldn't do, so they believed in you. And also, like, I struggled and I couldn't kind of live up to what I was supposed to. And so the safe place to live is I'm going to pick this fight. I'm going to create the failure. I'm going to stay there because that's safe for me.
Yeah.
Right.
There seems to be another part to this too, that goes along with that, Brannon, you know, just the way you just described it so eloquently, Patrick, is that you learned that there was going to be something at some point. So you just took control over when it would happen and you would pick the fight, because picking the fight was the inevitable, but the intolerable was the anxiety. So part of what's teasing itself up now is something to consider right now. If it's maybe just a replication in your day-to-day life, but it's around success now instead of something else, what makes the anxiety that you feel so intolerable? Why are you so incapable of not managing anxiety?
Yeah. You know, see, I think that I am when I'm aware of it, because that's not something I experience a lot. And I'm pretty, you know, I think this has been operating a level that's been, that I've been unaware of. And as we talk through that, and Brandon, as you, you know, kind of, you know, summarize the story I told, I'm becoming aware of the part that preceded that. So, you know, as teachers and parents look for the problem, their expectations went really down to a point that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't falling below them, because it was just clear I'm going to be, you know, I think they thought I was going to be someone who struggled in school, and it was going to be just trying to manage that and find what I was good at. Around fifth grade, a few things happened to where I got, you know, a lot of praise for things that were not, you know, academic. There was a news story, and the local news came out when I wrote a letter. We had to write a letter in fifth grade, and I wrote it to the Alabama Department of Transportation and said, hey, why are y'all doing work at this time? You know, when it's busy and at 3 p.m., there's no one there. And, you know, being in the local paper, you know, it was a big thing in elementary school. You know, the headline was Flowers, Fifth Grader Tackling Politics. And that was when I guess everyone started having, you know, hope, like, hey, I can do some things. But why, you know, and that created that disparity between, hey, we can see you can do big things. Why are you struggling here? And that's where hope became scary, because, you know, when they're, you know, when there's not hope, you're just kind of going through it day to day. When there's hope and big expectations, then it is, you're higher up that mountain in the fall. You know, that fear of falling below those expectations is much greater.
I have a couple questions, like things going through my mind. This could take us off. I just want to ask this, but I don't want to go off too far here. Do you sabotage intimacy as well?
Not anymore.
Okay. When you start feeling closer to your wife, you allow that process to happen and don't sabotage that?
For the most part, but actually, you know, in a way that, you know, having a lapse in sobriety may be subconsciously doing that.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering about. Yeah. Is, you know, we talk about success and hope and all these things. It's also there with your wife, because you're saying, I'm scared of expectations.
Yeah.
I want to lower expectations. And I wonder if her expectations are scary and you want to keep those low, you know, low enough, at least, like not too low of, you know, but like low enough that she'll stay with you, but like, you know, and so you can kind of see that control piece.
Yeah, it's actually probably my expectations, because when things are going really well and we're well connected, you know, that fear is this probably can't, you know, this may not continue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it'd be my own, you know, no one puts expectations on me any greater than I put on myself.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to fail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or this isn't, you know, I'm pushing so hard for this. It's unlikely it's going to happen in a way that's sustainable, because I have done well. Like, I've always had a drive, but it's been fear of failure, and that's not sustainable.
Brené Brown talks about instead of getting disappointed, you live a life of disappointment. Yeah. And yeah, so it's, I'll only go so far, and then I'll keep it at this place where I'm just, you know, going to be a disappointment, because that's easier and that's safer. The question I have, I think we've flushed this out some. What then? What's the answer? Like, how do you not do this? How do you change this?
Yeah, I think for me, it starts with this awareness, having you guys speak it out and help me see that. You know, and then it's, I think, getting to know that young part,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really validating its fear, and it's resourceful, you know, it's pretty resourceful for this young part to find a way to never fall too far.
Yeah.
Also,
go ahead.
You know, trying to help it find a new job.
You can definitely tell that you've done some IFS work in your recovery.
Yeah.
It's probably been pretty impactful for you, I'm guessing.
Oh, it has. I'm actually starting level one training this week.
Oh, good for you. That's awesome.
For IFS?
Yes.
You got into training. Congratulations.
Really, it's hard to do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're nailing it. And it's beautiful what you're saying is you go down, you get to know yourself and love that part of you that is hurting and in pain. And then you can unburden that part that part is protecting you.
Yep.
And so its intentions are good. But the outcomes of it protecting you are sound, you wouldn't be talking about it right now if that's what you wanted in your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to be able to love that part, see that part, be aware of it, acknowledge it, validate it. That's what lets it off the hook. That's what says, hey, like, thank you, but no thank you. Now let's bring some other parts into place here and step into my power more fully. My true self energy is going to come out now.
Yeah.
Because I see you and I acknowledge you. Right.
There's another part of that, Brandon. Not only does it need to be validated and understood, many of those parts, especially this one we're talking about, because this is a very like this, it sounds like we're talking for, we'll have to do a whole another episode on IFS, but we're talking to an exiled part here.
Yep.
Like this is a very vulnerable part here. That those parts also need, they need reassurance that what they're trying to accomplish can be accomplished in other ways. And they need trust in the other parts of yourself to know, hey, Patrick's going to take care of me here. You know, and I think that's maybe one of the things that you have in front of you right now in your life is you're starting to identify the part. You can do all the validation, the understanding, the curiosity, give it a new job. But you can also be the one right now who's saying, what are the other parts right now that I can start stepping in to providing the needs of this younger part of me? Like acting with courage, stepping in and going and failing and then knowing they're going to get through another failure. Doing some of that work with the other parts of yourself to build that trust with the exile is also, I think, really important.
No, I think you're onto something. And I think you're right. It's an exile. We won't go too far in IFS, but you know, the fact it's out of my awareness, I think suggests it's an exile because I've gotten to know the managers and firefighters well. And this one just didn't seem the same.
Yeah.
And I can tell it's, you know, it's deep because as you mentioned, failing, like, you know, at a conscious level, at a intellectual level, I'm not afraid to fail. I know that's part of it. But as you mention it, and I think about places where I'm going to fail, I can feel it in my chest. I can feel my heart rate speed up a little bit, chest tighten, you know, and that just, you know, so I know it's okay to fail, but part of me has a deep fear of that.
You know, we're kind of splitting hairs here and nerding out on IFS a little, but like from my, just my opinion, I think we're talking about a manager part that's very close to an exile.
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten to the exile yet, and we don't want to right now.
Yeah.
But that manager part is very much there, like right next to that exile. Like, hey, I'm getting like, let's go sabotage. Let's go lower expectations. Let's keep, because that exile is hiding. That exile is still hidden there. If we were to hit on your exile right now, you'd probably be a puddle of tears in front of us right now. And you know, one thing you can do with this part, or just when it comes up and it's there to protect you and it's triggered, and it, let's say things are going really well, things are good at work, things are good with the wife, and you're just like, hey, like, I'm starting to feel a little bit of hope, and that part's like, okay, time to shut this down. One way you can unburden it is just by updating the part of, hey, I'm a grown man now. I'm married. This is where I'm at in my life. I appreciate you. This is that part that came out in fifth grade, right? Like, I'm not in fifth grade, but man, you were awesome in fifth grade of helping me manage that situation. I'm good. Like, I love you. You're not a bad part. I'm good because I'm a grown man. I'm this old now. I'm working on this thing now. So just so you know, I'm okay. Right. And get used to, you got to be aware that the part's there. You got to acknowledge it. And then getting used to saying, I'm good. I'm okay. Over and over again. And then in that moment, you'll make a different decision. I can go drop a bomb, or I can go continue to climb this mountain. You know, I can make that different decision because that unconscious part is now conscious and you've unburdened it.
That's well said. And I think you're exactly right that it is a manager that's close to that exile, which makes sense why it's harder to access. And I think the evidence of that is first that manager's taking some action. It's doing something proactive. Yeah. And then there's that firefighter of acting out on the other side that comes in and, you know, says when all else fails, you know, and you're right about checking in with that part and just, you know, giving it some compassion and, you know,
update it. Love it. Yeah.
It's creating the very chaos it's trying to prevent, as the parts do.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love that you're so in touch with that. Like, even those who aren't watching, when you're talking, you put your hand right over your heart and you're like, I can feel it right here. Like, I know that that's there and it's starting to activate itself right now as we're talking. Sometimes that's the fastest way to the consciousness that the part's present and in the driver's seat, right? Is the physiology. And so being able to go, oh, there's that, like, you might not even know what's going on in your day-to-day life that's causing it, but you'll feel the anxiety of it. And then that's when the curiosity and the compassion and the consciousness starts to come up. And then you can kind of bring those other parts of yourself online to say, okay, I'm at work right now. I don't know what could happen with this. I am a little out of control here. Okay, thank you for reminding me of that. And what am I moving towards now? What is the next courageous step that I can lean in on, knowing that I trust myself because I've done it before? Like, that's what you have right now in front of you that's so cool about your recovery process. You've already climbed out of hell, so to speak. You know the same principles, many of the principles that you've been mastering, they'll apply with other parts of yourself too. And once you start to establish that trust and the skills that you use start to generalize to other parts of your life, it will build trust with that part of you that's like, but like, my wife is actually like loving me. I don't know what to do with that. Like, maybe I should hurry and like have a minor slip because I don't know what it's like for her to keep loving me and being as connected as she is. Oh, there's that heart rate again. What's that telling me? You know the drill. Like, the body is a gift here. It's consciousness. Yep.
I think it's underrated how important that is in parts work. I mean, we use it in EMDR, we use it in ART a lot. But when we map parts, like, using your body is so important. And so, Patrick, for you, I mean, I'm telling you this, I think you already know it, but now that we've kind of uncovered this, what I would do is almost go overboard with mapping this part. And you know what I mean by mapping the part, right?
Yeah.
Like, know it in every way you possibly can know it. Be aware of it. Know what parts it's friends with. Like, what is this firefighter part that connects to it that gets you to the acting out and whatever, or almost acting out or whatever? And so, as you go into these processes and these patterns that you've been in again and again and again, when you're so conscious of it, and back to what Tyler was saying of like, oh, I just felt that feeling in my heart. Like that lump in my throat. I'm just making stuff up now, but that lump in my throat, like, this is what usually starts to happen before I start dropping bombs everywhere. So, like, I'm aware that it's there. I'm so aware of it. You know, I like naming parts. Give it a specific name. Sometimes you give it a color of the energy that it is, or a shape. whatever it is, you're so aware of how it feels and how it looks and what it's like for you, then you'll be able to have some consciousness around it.
Yeah, that's good. And I'll tell you what I've done with my other parts. It's why I think that parts work so good for recovery. Because, you know, in early recovery, it seems like everything is an acting out trigger. Things are going well. Things aren't going well. You feel
firefighters everywhere. Just
yeah. You know, emotion equals acting out, and lack of emotion equals acting out. As you get in, you know, to do deep recovery, start looking at trauma, you know, have unburdened parts, you know, then it just makes room to get to know the others. But one of the things I've done is I've gotten to know them is I rename them. Because, you know, they have that positive intent. And, you know, when that inner, just like that inner critic becoming that inner cheerleader, I also think, you know, for my own, you know, Christian faith, you know, there's a very spiritual component, a biblical component to renaming, you know, given.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I understand the new name.
You're saying.
Totally a new name. That's awesome.
To your specific parts.
Yep. Yeah. I like it.
That's interesting.
An initiation.
Yeah, the one that used to be the primary driver to act out is actually trying to give me energy in life. You know, that big dump of dopamine was that drive to get done whatever's got to get done when it seems like there's a deadline. Yeah. And probably a bunch of cortisol and stuff, you know, that provokes that fear. But its intent was good. And it's, you know, that part's been unburdened, but it's still there. You know, I can, you know, get into a high gear and just keep going when I have to.
Yeah.
I love that. I was actually thinking, I have this imagery going in my brain for this part that we've been talking with today, trying to figure out almost the same idea. I didn't think of the idea of a new name, but also like a new way of looking at it and going, when it is activated and when it's there, it's actually a good thing because it's telling you something.
Yeah.
Right. And what is it telling you? One potential thought that I was having is, you know, I'm a fly fisherman. So bear with me on the analogy here for a second. When one of the ways that you find a good place to fish is you look for changes in the current, and the current where there's a slow current that has a faster current moving by it and a depth change, that's where the biggest fish are, because they can rest in the slower current, but they're also aware, they're still protected by the current. And then the faster current brings food by so that they go out and they feed in the faster current, and then they come back and rest. And that's called a seam. So this is my own personal analogy with my own recovery, but life is best lived in the seams. If you want a wholehearted life, you can't stay in the backwater. That's all murky and dirty, and there's nothing good there. You can't live in the fast current because that'll tire you out and sweep you away. But when you live in the seams, that means there's danger. Like, you could get obliterated. You could open your hopes up and maybe not have it come to fruition, but that's a life that's much more worth living than the life where you're completely safe, because you'll die a thousand deaths before you're actually dead, right? And what this part is telling you is like, dude, you're getting it right. You're in the seams right now. You're in the seams. Like, you're right on the edge of continued growth. This is really scary. You could get obliterated, but you're in the seams, man. You are fully alive. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like that. And as you were saying that, I was going with some different visions. You know, I love fishing, but for me, it's that mountain, because I can feel as I think about, you know, trying to ascend something, you know, kind of feeling it in that gut, that natural, hey, this is getting high, but not doing it alone, you know, because part of good recovery and, you know, my own faith journey is, you know, I've always got God as, you know, who's that Sherpa that's, you know, handing me the line. And it may fall, but when I'm anchored in, I'm connected to community, I've become pretty good. You know, vulnerability went from the thing I avoided the most to my superpower. I can be vulnerable. As I take those things, those are the rope. So when I fall, if I'm, you know, as I come to terms with this part and help it find a new role, that can be the one that can remind me, hey, we got enough going. We're not going to fall too far. So that, you know, when you're not afraid of falling too far, you can focus on the next steps going high.
It's vulnerability is interesting, though. You bring that up. Like for one person, it can look one way, and for another, it can look another. Like for you, Patrick, like you could say I'm being vulnerable because I'm a recovery rock star. I'm helping all these people. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And in reality, like your battle might be facing this, what we've talked about today. It's not self-sabotaging. It's, and so that's your edge to live on. That's the, whatever analogy we want to use, the mountain to climb or the, I forget what you called it, Tyler, the
life in the seams,
life in the seam. Like it can look a little different for all of us. Yet that's the way God's designed it. Like God's always asking us in to climb the mountain or live in the seam. That's what we're designed for. And if we get too comfortable, if our protective parts are just like dominating, they're just doing a really good job, that's problematic. And not that our parts are bad. I'm not saying that. And I know I'm not supposed to say that, but that's problematic because we're too comfortable. And what we've talked about today with you, Patrick, is how good you've been at staying comfortable in playing small. Yep. And God's calling you up. If you are, you're Patrick, you're Christian.
Yep.
Yeah. One of my favorite scriptures, John 14:27. And this is Christ. It says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." And I love parts work because it flips a lot of the normal kind of recovery thinking on its head. People come into recovery and they say, what I need to do is reject myself and reject what I've been doing in order to change. I need to reject me. And what parts work says is, you know what? Neither let your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Love yourself. Know yourself and have compassion for yourself. It's beautiful the way that you've learned how to cope. So let's not have that fear. Now step into those seams, climb that mountain, do those things. So we're applying love to change. We're applying love to letting go of control versus applying fear and shame and control in order to try to not feel those same things, right? You've done a lot of that work where you rest in the arms of God that loves you, so that you can live in the vulnerable places. And Patrick, you've been really honest and vulnerable. Man, I would love to have you as a client. Like you are the type of person that does the work, and is trying to get conscious. And it's a beautiful thing to hear and to watch. And I hope the people that have listened to this episode with you recognize the work that you're doing, that they can see that and feel that.
Patrick, what's going through you right now as we've been talking and having this discussion? What are your thoughts, your insights, even your state of emotion right now?
Yeah. So first, Brandon, when you were talking about vulnerability, you know, you're right, because I am willing to be vulnerable. And whenever I identify it, I live by a principle that when I identify shame, you got to turn and face it. A spearfish, and sharks are always coming after me, bull sharks, when you have a dead fish. And everything in your body saying, go away from them. And I've learned that you got to fight that. When you swim towards a shark and poke it, it usually doesn't know what to do. It goes away. I can see that this was a place to where there wasn't some vulnerability, but really it was a part that I had not identified. You know, and that's what I love about parts work is this wasn't the place to start 2 years ago. I had to get the obvious places, because this one only comes up every now and then. But, you know, just like in recovery with parts work, you know, there's always going to be that next part that needs some compassion, some curiosity, some understanding, you know. And once this one gets a new role, it's going to need me to check in with it. But then that next one will come to my attention. So just kind of, I think that that's one of the great things about doing parts work is, you know, that work's never done. Recovery's never done. I see it as the lifelong journey of sanctification. I'm never going to be perfect,
Yep.
And as I get better at one thing, I'm going to become more obvious of where I need to work in another area.
Yep.
I love to hear that out of your mouth. You know, something I look for in my clients when I know they're going to be okay in their recovery is when they finally come wholeheartedly to an acceptance, not just an acceptance, but an embracing of that principle that recovery and a wholehearted life is the constant pursuit of continued growth. It's not arriving somewhere and being all done. It's actually, I get to grow the rest of my life. And I just love the way you describe that. Like, I'm going to uncover another part, and then I'll uncover another part, and then I'll, and it will never end. And other people are listening like, well, you, it's never going to end. And you're like, no, it's awesome. It's never going to end. I'm going to get to keep growing. And I love hearing that. And I love hearing it with the energy that you just said it too.
Thanks.
I'll be honest with you, Patrick. Before you came on and reading your question and things, I was kind of like, uh-oh, like we're going to have a kind of know-it-all come on and who's, you know, here to educate us and talk about how great they are, you know, and you showed up the opposite of that.
The exact opposite.
Like, yeah. Like you've showed up with like, oh, like I have some work to do and I have some shame under there still. And although you've had tremendous amounts of success in your recovery work, you're a living, breathing example of what you just said.
Yep.
That there's still things to tweak, still things to work on, still things to find, and still ways to know yourself better.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I hope to always live that way.
Yeah.
It's a good way to live.
I think it's how the Apostle Paul did. You know, he became, it seemed like as his writings went on, he became more aware of his shortcomings.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, but he didn't live in the shame of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just, I think fighting shame unlocks our capacity, you know, to both embrace more of what we do right, but also to, you know, compassionately see where we're falling short.
Yep. Yeah. You know, it's both. Recovery. It's a gift.
Yeah, my narrative, you know, I had blinders on so much, I couldn't even see what I did wrong. I could tell you what you were doing wrong.
Right.
But that was just, you know, really activated parts that were afraid of doing any internal work. So I externalized, you know, my own shame, my own struggles.
It's great. It's a great thought. We're kind of coming up close to time here. Is there anything left on the table that you feel like you need to ask or speak today, Patrick?
No, I appreciate this opportunity to get some insight from you guys.
Yeah, I just want to say, good luck at the IFS training. I'm totally jealous.
I'm jealous awesome. Too, man.
Well, keep applying for the lottery.
Yeah.
I look forward to hearing an episode, y'all doing an episode on parts work more in depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, we Brandon and I are both really big fans of IFS, especially the more we've been in recovery and the more that we've kind of gone from this place of kill off your addict to wait a minute, you have to embrace it all in order to unburden it. Like, you know, so yeah, we're really big fans of it, and it merges really, really well with other kinds of treatment that we do, like EMDR and ART and other things as well. So thank you for the way you've showed up here today. Thank you for the courage to come on the show. You coming on is a gift to a lot of people right now. And it does take courage, even though you kind of mastered this part of it and you're working on other things. You putting yourself out there was a gift. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, it's not easy when there's that thing. There are 20 other things we could have talked about that would have felt really safe. And I think that's part of growing is, hey, what's that place where I need to, where I'm not showing up authentically for myself? Yep. I need to lean in and swim after that, swim towards that. That's the shark that's going to eat my lunch.
Yeah.
If I don't face it, if I pretend it's not there.
Yep. You've learned how to face it. I love it. What a great analogy that you get to go spearfishing and confront bull sharks.
Yep.
So that's awesome, man. Yeah. Well, for those of you guys listening, if you appreciate what's been said here today, reach out with a review or something, mention Patrick's name. Hopefully these things are meaningful for you. And until we talk to you guys next time, keep on keeping on.
All right. We'll see you.